Good afternoon and welcome to Juno Afternoon for Tuesday, the 13th of January, the year 2017. I'm Jeff Brennan, your host for today. We'll be talking with Nancy Corden and Larry Jones about the LunaFest Film Festival. We'll talk with Mandy Cole about the upcoming project Homeless Connect. Wayne Jensen will be here to highlight Wednesday's legislative reception. Chris Myrtle will be here to highlight the master plan for the Uplands area by the Douglas Bridge. And we'll get an update from the school district. Matt Ryder's Almanac, Bruno, Music and More on Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, a 40% chance of snow, mostly after midnight. Forecast for Wednesday, rain, high temperatures near 37 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, snow likely, mostly before noon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Actress and activist Jane Fonda recently traveled to Alberta to tour the oil sands and meet with First Nations people. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the visit was met with mixed reactions.
Jane Fonda is the latest in a list of stars and celebrities to make the trip to Fort McMurray to visit what some environmental activists describe as Canada's embarrassment, the oil sands. But she may not have picked the best time for the visit. Fort McMurray is reeling from job losses because of the downturn in the oil and gas sector and still feeling the effects of last year's devastating wildfires. Still, Fonda reflected on the aerial view she had of the oil sands.
It's like someone took my skin and peeled it off my body over a very large surface. Made my body ache to watch it.
Some native leaders, like Athabasca Chippewyan First Nation Chief Alan Adams, says Fonda's visit is important in the fight against oil and gas development.
So we need people to continue to raise the awareness of what's going on Indian country, as they say.
But not all Indigenous people are opposed to the oil sands. Many work in the oil and gas industry. Robbie Picard is a pro-oil sands activist with the group Oil Sands Strong.
She's attacking the very thing that feeds us all at the worst possible time. I mean, there's thousands of people unemployed. There's people unsure if they're going to be able to rebuild their houses. And then you have this multi-millionaire pretend like she cares about First Nation issues.
And at least one First Nation is distancing itself from Fonda's tour. The Cree and Dene Band government said they could not build homes and other infrastructure in the community without oil sands development. Fonda spent 2 days in Alberta. She was also critical of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for what she described as a betrayal of the commitments he made at the Paris climate talks last year. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
President Obama has apparently decided not to declare the Greater Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument in Arizona. Congressman Raul Grijalva says the U.S. Department of the Interior did not recommend the designation to the president. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Grijalva says Interior Secretary Sally Jewell expressed concerns about the monument designation to him after the November election. The congressman responded to those concerns in a letter, but says the agency still didn't endorse the plan.
It was a legacy that I think the president would have supported, but if you get no recommendation from the department responsible for that recommendation, then there's nothing to act on, and that's where the disappointment lies.
Grijalva met with officials from the White House Council on Environmental Quality recently, and they told him the president wouldn't declare the monument. Neither the White House nor the Interior Department have commented on the decision. Conservationists in several southwestern tribes, including the Navajo, Havasupai, and Wallapai, back the monument. They say the designation would protect thousands of cultural sites and the area's watershed by permanently outlawing uranium mining there.
The Grand Canyon is being one of the icons of the national park system, one of the wonders of the world, the pride of Arizona. It is an endangered public asset that we have in this country.
Grijalva says he and other conservationists will continue to advocate for a national monument to protect more than 1.5 million acres of public land near Grand Canyon National Park. The monument proposal was opposed by Arizona's Republican congressional delegation, along with Governor Doug Ducey and the state's Game and Fish Department. They worried the plan would add an unneeded layer of federal control over the land. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Events are taking place this week in the Washington, D.C. area surrounding the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. The National Congress of American Indians is hosting a transition meeting Thursday. According to the Navajo Nation Council, Navajo Code Talkers will participate in Friday's inaugural parade. There are also Native American receptions, dinners, balls, a powwow, and art market planned through the weekend. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. You're tuned to TVO News in Juneau, Karen and FM in Juneau here on Juneau Afternoon. Our first guests are Nancy Courtney and Lori Jones, here to talk about the Lunathest Film Festival, which is coming up this week. Thanks for coming down, everybody.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
So, what is the Lunathest Film Festival, please?
Well, this is a national, international film festival that is was started by the Luna Bar Company. I'm sure everybody's had Luna Bars before.
Or Cliff Bars. It's the same company.
Yes. Yeah. And they're films that are made by women, for women, about women. So it's a lot about female empowerment.
And the showing here in Juneau is when?
This Friday night at doors open at 6. The movies will start sometime shortly after 6:30. There's also a silent auction to go along with it, and it's just a lot of fun. The films are every place from like 2 minutes to 20 minutes, and there's 9 of them total. A lot of fun, international flavor. Just really, each one is really different from the one before, so it's a lot of fun. This is the 10th year we've done this in Juneau, and I can remember some really memorable ones going back years, and then every year they go, gosh, I think this is the best year ever. So I'm expecting everybody will love the films this year again.
Can you give us an overview of it, please?
Overview of the films? Well, there's one about a beauty shop where a woman walks in after having had an altercation with her significant other, and some really poignant kinds of things. There's a lesbian couple that owns a bar together, and shortly about that. My very favorite is called The Honeys and the Bears, and it's about a geriatric synchronized swimming team. So...
That says it all.
That was absolutely my favorite, and it happens to be the last film in the series that we'll show. So, a lot of fun.
As a benefit performance, a benefit showing.
It is a benefit. The Luna Bar people have been doing this for 16 years. We've only done it for 10 here in Juneau, but and they get the films together, and then they distribute them for local people to organizations to raise money. And 15% of whatever we make goes back to the Luna Bar Company for their breast cancer fund. So it's going to, our proceeds will help the Juneau Pro-Choice Coalition as well as the breast cancer fund.
It's happening the 20th at
6 o'clock
at Centennial Hall. And this year we have one extra bonus at our LunaFest event. We are going to have a table where people can make posters, signs for the Women's March that's happening the next day on Saturday on the 21st. So if you're fired up and ready to go with that, we'll have the opportunity to make signs for the Women's March the next day. So that's an exciting addition to this year's LunaFest Film Festival.
Can you give us a preview of some of the items that are going to be auctioned off during the silent auction?
Well, one of them is going to be some great desserts, or several of them anyway.
Yeah. There's a small dessert auction, but also on the actual auction tables, there's at least 2 dinners that I'm aware of, a couple of massages, there's some children's books. We try to get a real wide gamut so that both in price-wise, and there's some beautiful jewelry, so that almost anybody can afford something at our auction.
That sounds great.
And these auction items are donated personally and also by local businesses. So we have a lot of support from local businesses, which we really appreciate. So come and support Juno for Choice Coalition and local businesses and our
breast cancer.
And breast cancer by attending this event on Friday, 6 o'clock, Centennial Hall.
And can you tell me how much the tickets cost?
Right.
Tickets are $12 if you can buy them ahead of time, and you can get them either from board members or Hearthside Books or online at lunafest.org.
All right. Anything you'd like to add?
There'll be some door prizes. And actually, we'll have some free Luna bars, too. So lots of fun, a good chance to meet other people. There's lots of men that come. So it's not just women, but certainly for the men who support their women, everybody's welcome. It's a lot of fun.
And we have a great MC and a wonderful public speaker that will be in the intermission for the films. So we'll be getting some local support as well that people will get to hear from, which is just adds that much more fun to the evening.
Pat McClear is going to be our MC. So
she's great.
she is great.
All right, thanks for coming by.
All right,
thank you.
Seth.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 17th of January, 2017. The birthday of Benjamin Franklin, Boston, 1706. He made his money in the printing business and as the publisher of Poor Richard's Almanac, little sayings like early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And then he turned to science and to inventions. He'd already invented a safer, more efficient stove called the Franklin stove. He established the first fire company, came up with the idea of fire insurance. He invented bifocals, swim fins, the odometer, and the lightning rod. It's the birthday of Sebastian Younger, born in Belmont, Massachusetts, 1962. He was working as a tree trimmer, and he cut his leg with a chainsaw. He was recovering when he read about a commercial fishing boat out of Gloucester, the Andrea Gale, gone missing in the North Atlantic, casualties of the Halloween Northeaster, a very violent storm that collided with Hurricane Grace, which had moved up from the southwest. Younger started researching the story of Captain Billy Time and his crew, and it became his first book, a very successful one, 1997, The Perfect Storm, a true story of men against the sea. It's the birthday of the poet William Stafford, Hutchinson, Kansas, 1914, who said, "I don't cherish the poems that are done. I cherish the poems that are coming. I'd sacrifice all of the poems of the past for whatever is coming up." It's the birthday of the great novelist of Puerto Rico, Luis Lopez Nieves, born in San Juan, Puerto Rico, 1950, author of The True Death of Juan Ponce de Leon and Voltaire's Heart. And it's the birthday of the third of the Bronte sisters, Anne Bronte, born Yorkshire, 1820, whose second novel, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, was very successful. The heroine who leaves her husband to protect their son from the influence of the father. Here's a poem for today by Robin Chapman, English class. 12th grade reading lists stretched out as endless as the sentences we diagrammed, as orderly as the outlines for our senior essays. Humanism in England in the 14th century, I think I wrote about cobbling facts together about Erasmus and the church, forgetting those were plague years. And Henry David Thoreau's pithy quotes, Marching to a Different Drummer, hooked me for a solitary ramble of Walden, not knowing he dined every night with Emerson and Alcott. And our teacher always turned to us with hope, searching for some sign that we'd found a spark and engaged liveliness in all those endless marching words. Her eyes lit up, her thin hair frizzed, her faith in us fixed, misplaced, stirring fugitive regret in our adolescent gaze, preoccupied with who to ask to the swank at ball and who to sit with at the Friday football game, whom she'd certainly have made us say. English Class by Robin Chapman from Six True Things, published by Thibaut Bach Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Staples with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage, and more. More at Staples Stores or staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 16 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a junior afternoon. Our next guest is Mandy Cole. She's going to be here talking about the Project Homeless Connect. Thank you for coming in, Mandy.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
And I don't mean to call you a ghost.
Not the worst thing I've been called today, Jeff.
So you're here to talk about the Project Homeless Connect. Why are you doing this? Can you give me an overview of the idea?
Sure. So I work at AWARE, but AWARE is part of a larger coalition of agencies here in Juneau. They get together and work on the issue of homelessness. We are the Juneau Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, and our annual event to kind of bring awareness and services to people who need housing and housing advocacy is called Project Homeless Connect. We've been doing it for about 6 years now. So it's a really fun and engaging time. We get a bunch of service providers and we make lunch and breakfast. It's really yummy. And we invite people who are homeless, at risk of being homeless or some kind of housing instability, down to the Jack on Wednesday, January 25th, and they help us take a little survey so we can kind of gather some information on, you know, what's going on for people. Are they losing their housing because of losing work? Are they priced out of the market? Have they experienced some kind of trauma or some kind of challenge that's preventing them from being home, from being successfully housed? And we do this survey with folks to get some information and numbers, and that helps us kind of plan our work in the coming year as agencies. But then we also kind of guide them through a system of accessing help. So they might need to get a new identification. They might need a haircut. They might need a housing application for St. Vincent de Paul. All of those services will be there in one place, so it's kind of a one-stop shop for folks who need help with housing.
How many people attended last year?
Over 200, which is quite a lot. We've consistently gotten around, you know, between 175 to 200 people in the 6 years that we've been doing this project. So not every one of those is homeless, and not every one of those people lives on the street, but they all have some kind of housing instability in their lives.
How long should people plan on spending there?
Well, if you are a participant and you're coming for some services, you can plan on spending the entire day there. We open at 9 a.m. and we go until 3 p.m., so you can enjoy breakfast and coffee, and someone will help you kind of sample all of the services that we have to provide, and then you can have lunch and hang out for the afternoon. If you're a volunteer, you know, we ask you to come a little bit before the event starts, maybe about 8:30, make sure you have everything set up. You know, maybe you're a service provider or you're helping to administer those interviews, those little intakes that we talked about. So we ask you to come just a little bit early, do a little orientation, get the lay of the land, and then we can really use help for however long you can give it that day. So some people come for an hour, some people come for the entire day.
What kind of things surprised you last year?
Well, you know, my job at AWARE is helping to provide emergency shelter for women and children, particularly who need it, and survivors of domestic and sexual assault. So my work is kind of ingrained in this type of stuff every day. But the thing that surprises me most is just how festive the event can be. There are a lot of people who maybe they are living on the street, but they haven't reconnected with family. I have a particular person that I know who is homeless, and they kind of hang out downtown, but their family lives in the valley, and they're also struggling with housing, and so it's kind of a little bit of a family reunion of sorts last year when they got to see friends and family that they hadn't seen in a little while. And the other thing is that because it's just there's so much goodwill, there's just so much helping energy there that it feels good to be able to do a thing. I think one of the things that's going on in Juneau right now is people are scratching their heads saying, what can I do about people who are homeless? I don't know. I don't want to walk past someone, but I don't know what to give or what to do. And this is a real opportunity to do something that has immediate and lasting effects. So whether or not you're there because you can offer someone a service like housing or some kind of voter registration or PFD registration, or you just walk around with a tray of coffee, handing it to people who haven't been handed coffee for a long time, it feels important and good to take a step toward helping someone who needs some help.
What happens to the information you gather?
So all of the state during this day is reaching out in different ways to kind of survey the homeless population in the state of Alaska. This coincides with Alaska's point-in-time count, which is kind of a snapshot picture of homelessness. And so many service providers, school districts, domestic violence shelters, and then outreach teams will be working on that day and making a count, kind of the most comprehensive count we can make of one day and time of the homeless population in Alaska. And then everyone sends those numbers into some kind of magic factory at the state, and they do their good work. And then a few months later, they send it back out, and they let us know kind of what are the trends in terms of homelessness and the data and demographics for homelessness around the state. So it's a really good way for us moving forward to maybe request funding to address a particular issue. It's important for those of us who are working on a particular segment of homelessness to know, you know, are our programs having any impact? Are we getting youth off the streets? Are we making a dent in veterans' homelessness? So those initiatives that we use during the year or that we pursue during the year can kind of tell us this is a little bit of a report card in some ways. Have we moved the needle? And so in addition to setting goals, it helps us kind of evaluate a little bit of where we've been.
Are men, women, and children invited?
Everyone's invited, that's right. And, you know, one of the things that someone asked me the other day and I thought was a really great question is, you know, I know this goes on during the school day, but a community member asked me, can I bring my 10-year-old son to help because I really want him to be involved and understand this issue? And I said, sure, of course. You know, it is not an event that you need to be, you don't need to be an adult to enjoy it. You don't need to be an adult to serve. Any of us can do those things. And so I think it's a great thing for a family to do together if they can. But I'm also interested in help from just about anyone who wants to give it.
If people want to help out, how can they do so?
Well, they can let me know by calling AWARE. They can also call the Alaska Housing Development Corporation. They're another helping agency that's really kind of organizing this event. And you can call 780-4475, or you can call Mandy Cole at AWARE at 586-6623. You can also kind of reach out to most any of the agencies here in town. So maybe you know an employee at the Glory Hole, or you have a friend who volunteers at St. Vincent de Paul. All of us are kind of involved in this. It's a really like grassroots community effort. And so just about anyone can kind of funnel you to the right to the right person, which is probably me or Sherry Pardon at Alaska Housing Development Corporation. However, if none of those things work and I forget to answer my phone for the next week, You can also show up on Wednesday, January 25th at about 8:30 and say, I want to help, and I will find a job for you.
Mandy, thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I just think that everyone, that this is a topic that is hot right now in Juneau, and this is a way to help. So if you've been looking at a way to kind of weigh in on some of the things that are happening politically in Juneau, this is a place where you can make a difference and you can kind of see real time what people are living through on the street. And so I would really just recommend that anyone who is unsure of how they feel about the issue of homelessness in Juneau, come on down that day and check it out.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Here, and you are tuned into it June afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Wayne Jensen, here to talk about the legislative reception, which is coming up tomorrow. Wayne, thank you for coming down the station.
Yes, tomorrow at 5 o'clock at Centennial Hall. It's a reception that's sponsored by the community of Juneau, welcoming all the legislators and staff back to town at the start of the session. It's been going on now for 32 years, and we've done this every year, opportunity to welcome people back and thank them for their service to the public, and enjoy a little camaraderie with the community of Juneau.
And has some wonderful snacks.
Very nice snacks. It's catered. This year it's being catered by the Prospector. They do a really good job, and it's a lot of fun. It's good food and opportunity to, welcome everybody back to Juneau.
How many people showed up last year?
We typically have around 1,000, so maybe between, 800 and maybe 1,200, but, an average around 800 to 1,000 people. So it's a big turnout. People at Juneau are very welcoming and contribute to this, too, as well as showing up. It's funded completely by businesses and individuals in town, and it shows the generosity that this community has.
There's probably too many to name individually, but there's some big ones.
There's some big ones. Alaska Airlines, Sea Alaska, Gold Belt, the city contributes some money, credits to the convention center. So those are some of the big ones that contribute.
What surprises you when you see the stream of people coming?
Well, it's really heartening, I think, because, people realize how important the capital city is and how important, the legislature is and the capital is to this city. And it's really an opportunity to show our appreciation to the people that, serve a lot to the public of this state.
All right. Thanks for coming in. Again,
okay.
What time is that?
It starts at 5 o'clock. It goes to 5 to 6:30, and I understand that the State of the State address is immediately after that. So it's an opportunity to come by and enjoy some food, welcome the legislators, and then go and watch the State of the State.
Wayne, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. It's winter and time for a vacation. Let's head to the Amazon. So many birds. What are the sounds we're hearing? Now, that's the colorful cry of the surprisingly drab screaming peahawk. And that hooting sound? That's from the blue-crowned motmot. There's the saucy cry of the black-necked red katinga. And those continuous sounds? Those are insects. Oh, now we're hearing the call of a Cuvier's toucan. And the growl of a howler monkey. Listen for the delicate call of the musician wren. BirdNote invites you to sit back and enjoy the sounds of the Amazon.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
It's about 31 minutes past the hour. You're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau and Karen NFM in Juneau. Next in the studio, we have Gary Gillette, Carl Yucatel, and Chris Myrtle here to talk about process involving wetlands.
No, actually, it's uplands.
Uplands. I don't know about land.
It's uplands. We're doing the land use master planning for the area around Harrison Aurora Harbor, what we're calling from Bridge Park all the way to Norway Point.
Why are we doing this?
Well, I'll let Carl kick off with that one because he can tell a little bit more.
So, this is really the natural progression in our harbor. So we've got a good plan out at Stater Harbor that we've got multiple phases going on out there. We've got the downtown cruise ship dock plan fairly well moving forward. But we've always thought that the area, the uplands between the bridge and Norway Point, or the uplands for supporting Harris and Aurora Harbor, really needed that deliberate thought and thought process and community engagement to really move us forward and really building a harbor system that we can be really proud of.
Is there a master plan now?
There is not. So this land use plan is really to take a look at what do we want the uplands to do? What do we want to support? How do we make our harbors a draw for people in the community to come? And how do we make it accessible through bike trails and bike paths and sea walks? And it just is a very important document moving forward. And we really want to encourage the community to come out and help us craft that way forward.
What's the process?
Well, what we're up to, Jeff, is we had the first round of public meetings back just before summer. We purposely didn't hold any meetings during the summer just due to availability of the public and a lot of the users. It's a different master planning process that is new to the city. It's something we've done down in Wrangell in terms of doing a waterfront master planning. What we're dealing with is we're incorporating feasibility and economic studies. Because our waterfronts play such an important role in our local economy, identifying who we are as a coastal community, and plays a very, very important role in terms of supporting the people that use and work down in our harbors. So the process that we're going through with this is we went through just before summertime, and we did a session to understand priorities and needs of the current users down there. What we've been doing over the last summer is we have Melani with Raincoast Data working with us, and she's been looking at the economic analysis and the opportunities. What are some of the opportunities that we can incorporate into the planning that's going to make Juneau a premier port again? You know, what are some of the economic opportunities that we may not be looking at currently that are opportunities for us to incorporate into the master planning. We also have James Bibb with Northwind Architects, who's helping out in some of the urban planning and some of the building development master planning. And then as the lead with Corvus Design, we're kind of bringing everything together and taking all these pieces, and how do we really create an Uplands master plan? So we have a meeting tonight. It's in room 206 of the Juno Douglas High School. Starts at 6:30. And really it's going to be the reporting of what Melanie has found about the economic opportunities and getting interest from the public to understand, hey, you know, you gave us these priorities. These are the economic opportunities. Do these make sense to the community? Once we get that input from the public and also from Docks and Harbors, we're then going to spend the next 2 days at the Yacht Club actually developing these ideas into our master plans. And we invite the public to come down to the Yacht Club Wednesday and Thursday. We'll be there just doing design, look over our shoulder, get involved, provide some input. And then we'll be presenting our findings Thursday evening at 6:30, this time at the Yacht Club, and presenting two or three concepts and getting public input, and then taking that to develop a final master plan.
What kind of economic opportunities have been floated so far?
Well, I don't want to give away Melanie's her analysis. She and I were just going over it earlier today. She came across some pretty amazing stuff that I think probably Carl and Gary aren't even aware of. She's been studying Southeast Alaska for 20-some years. And just the size of the fleet that we have here in Juneau, Southeast Alaska and Juneau is significantly underserved in terms for marine services. So this is whether it be travel lifts, doing work on boats. And, of course, that creates an amazing amount of economic opportunities in terms of creating jobs, bringing other boats from other communities into the community, and actually keeping a lot of the fleet in Juneau, because a lot of the fleet is going to Wrangell and other communities where they have better facilities. So I'm not going to give it away, but we're looking at marine services as one opportunity. We're looking at retail and commercial. There's some definite need for improving retail and commercial to support the people that are either part of the fleet or that use our current harbor facilities. And then there's also housing opportunities. So these are all, I'm not going to give them all away, but those are some of the things that we're looking at, some of the big picture stuff. But I was actually, as was Melanie, we were blown away by some of the data she came up with. We went, wow, we weren't aware of that. So I'm not going to spill the beans.
But you want the public to come by.
Yes, yeah. So most certainly.
What's important about the public coming by, Gary?
Well, it's always important to hear from the public. And, you know, we have a user group, those people that use the harbor all the time, but all our harbors are publicly owned, so they're open to the public, and a lot of people use them just to take a walk down, check out the boats, and, you know, be down on the waterfront. So it's important we hear from the overall community. You know, we haven't had a master plan, but there's been a number of different plans over the year to do something over on this end and another thing over here, and we want to pull that all together and make sure that it's coherent, that we don't allow some development to happen in an area that would have been higher value to have another use there. So that's why the whole idea of taking a big look at this, and then hopefully it'll be a roadmap for future development as we accumulate funding for these type of projects.
You've done community meetings already. What should people bring when they come to a community meeting?
I would say they need to come with an open mind. The best meetings, especially in small communities, people come with an open mind. They have their position that they want to talk about, but really to listen to other people and to find consensus. Because even though there may be something that you may not agree with wholeheartedly, there's going to be something in here that's going to be for you. And I think that's real important in any master planning and public process, is really understanding that this is for the whole community. It's not for one person. And you need to find those elements that are really going to support and make Juneau a stronger community, a better port facility, and provide economic opportunities. So you need to bring your own issues to the table, of course, but you also need to look at the big picture and realize that this means more to the community, and even Southeast Alaska for that matter. Our waterfronts are very, very critical to our communities and our region.
Again, when is that?
So tonight's meeting is at 6:30. It's in room 206. We also have a Docks and Harbors board meeting at 5:30, also in room 206 of the high school. Of course, that's a public meeting as well. But really, the true public meeting is tonight at 6:30, room 206 of the high school. As I said, we will have an open studio session at the Yacht Club Wednesday and Thursday, starting around from 9 to 3. So the public is more than welcome to come down and watch P&D Engineers, Corvus Design, Northwind Architects, and Raincoast Data as we work our magic, and we'll be having Gary and Carl helping out and anybody else from Docks and Harbors, and really start crafting these three plans from the input that we get tonight. And then the next meeting is Thursday at 6:30 at the Yacht Club, and that's where we'll be presenting these two or three master plans and getting public input and hopefully crafting a final preferred alternative that we can move forward with.
As long as we have a couple of harbors people with us, what's the status of the Douglas at Boat Harbor?
Well, Douglas Boat Harbor is in construction, if you've been over there. They're doing great. They're ahead of schedule. Things are going real well. We expect that to be open in the spring. We've got other projects going on. You probably noticed the cruise ship dock downtown. That one, again, is another project that's going real smoothly. They expect to be done ahead of time and well in front of the cruise ship schedule. And then the other project we got under construction, finalizing, is Stater Harbor. That one's nearly complete, and that's been a big project for us for this last summer. And next year will be the first year that the public will have full access to that facility.
So. All right. Anything you'd like to mention that I forgot to ask?
I just think that, you know, it's important to know that, you know, this is a long-term planning exercise we're going through, that we want to have that blueprint for something that we're looking 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road. So nothing is going to be easy, but I think it's important to have, you know, a thoughtful plan. And then once we have something that we can, that the community can galvanize around, that we'll be able to start looking for grant funding or other opportunities for revenue and keep moving forward and making the harbors the best we can make them in Southeast, and something that we're all proud of.
And if people want to provide their input and they can't make the meetings, what's the way to do it?
Well, we also have a website set up. It's junowaterfront.blogspot.com. So that's junowaterfront.blogspot.com. So that's where we keep all of our data. Anytime we have a public meeting, we summarize everything there. So that's probably one of the easiest ways to go and reference all the documents we've put together and what we've heard from the public related to the project. You can always give me a call at Corvus Design. It's 988-9000. That's 988-9000. And we'll be happy to pass on any information that you need. Gary, do you want to make yourself available?
Yeah, you can always call me. I'm Gary Gillette. I'm the port engineer. My number is 586-0398, and glad to help anybody out that wants to give a call.
All right. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
Here on your tuned Juno afternoon. Our next guest in the studio, Jesse Mankins and Andrea Thomas, here to talk about health care. Thank you so much for coming down to the station.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So in an overview, what are the choices out there and how do people access them?
Mm-hmm. So here in Alaska, there are many ways to get covered. And as navigators and certified application counselors, we're available to help the public understand what options are available to them. Right now, it's currently open enrollment. That means that through healthcare.gov, we can help folks understand whether or not they might be eligible for a plan with significant support to reduce cost of that insurance if they qualify, or they might be eligible for Medicaid given Medicaid expansion in our state.
How much confusion is out there?
There's quite a bit of confusion, I have to say. Yeah. You know, Andrea and I were helping folks today here in Juneau and helping individuals yesterday. And time again, they were saying to us, you know, I thought that this is over now. And, of course, they were reflecting on what they've been hearing in the news, you know, mm-hmm. given the recent events with the reconciliation process in Congress in D.C. We really want folks to know.
It's not over, and open enrollment is now. People have until the end of this month, January 31st, to sign up for health coverage. And actually, you know, people can sign up for Medicaid any time of the year. But in order to sign up for the health insurance marketplace where people can get assistance paying their monthly premium, now is the time. And it can be kind of a confusing process, so that's why we're available to help people. And actually, we're available all the time, but we just happen to be here in Juneau, and we're having an event tonight at UAS at the Egan Library in the Learning Center from 6 to 8 p.m. And, you know, they have computers down there, and we could actually help people go through the whole process, setting up an account and assisting people to enroll and so they understand what the different plans are and to find one that works for them.
How often are you involved in a political discussion? You're down there, you represent the government as far as people are concerned, and they want to talk to you.
You know, I'll take that question. You know, this is nonpartisan work. We're here to share concrete, factual information. So when Alaskans have questions about the politics that certainly influence our work, our job is to provide clear information as we know it. There's a lot of unknowns right now that are out there, and we need to acknowledge that. There is uncertainty. We're not sure how the reconciliation and repeal efforts are going to shape up. But what we do know is that in our state, in 2017, for the year of 2017, Primera, the issuer that's participating in our marketplace, is under a contractual agreement to provide those plan options through the marketplace. So that's why it's really, really important for Alaskans to seize this opportunity. There are options to get covered through healthcare.gov, the marketplace here in Alaska, for 2017.
Do you want to add anything?
Well,
it
is a confusing time, but I think people, so if people are hesitating because they're saying, well, why bother signing up because it might not be here on Friday? Well, actually, it's open enrollment until January 31st, and these are contracted agreements between insurance companies, and this is happening all over our country, right? These are It's not a willy-nilly thing, and so it's going to be quite a process. And so if people are uninsured and need health insurance, now is the time to do it. We have got until January 31st. And, you know, what people can expect is when they come get assistance, it's a very confidential process. So because we're talking about people's income, whether or not they have a job, and all that information is kept really confidential, and we set up an account. and we put in their information, and then it comes back with what's called a premium tax credit. That's how much the federal government pays directly to the insurance company to help pay for the monthly premium, the cost of insurance. Mm-hmm. And most people qualify for a pretty big premium tax credit. Mm-hmm. So most people can get a very affordable health plan.
The average support that an Alaskan receives is $750 per month to offset the cost of that insurance.
Per month.
That's very significant. And we know that in our state, the cost of care is extremely high. We know that the cost of delivering care is extremely high. And all of these pressures then translate to very high premiums. And we're all very aware of that living in this state, whether or not you're looking at a public option or employer insurance. You know, this is a great concern mm-hmm. to residents and, frankly, to our economy. And so, again, you know, understanding and acknowledging those constraints, this is an avenue for families to receive support through these circumstances.
So if people have questions, they could go to healthcare.gov or they can come tonight to the meeting at UAS.
That's right. And at the Alaska Primary Care Association, where I work, you know, we facilitate this work statewide. We also have an 800 number that I'd encourage folks to jot down. That's 1-844-752-6725. That's staffed by a navigator Monday through Friday, and we're available to help. But even more so, I want to give a big shout out to Search. Andrea here is a manager of their outreach and enrollment department. She does incredible work. Search's number locally for folks to have here in this region is 1-907-966-8662. That line is attended to by a certified application counselor. These are local experts. Folks really, really do trust their local enrollment professionals, and we are really, really fortunate in this region to have Search's leadership.
And I think it's important to understand that because of our grant money, we serve everyone with this service. It's not just for Alaska Native or American Indian, but we serve everybody in our whole region with questions and helping them sign up for health coverage, affordable health coverage. So it's available to everyone. I really encourage people to call us.
If people are going to the meeting tonight, what should they bring?
Well, if they really want to sign up for coverage, they should bring any kind of income information. Could be a tax returns from last year. It could be a pay stub. And if they weren't born in the United States, they should bring some immigration documents like an I-94 or a green card because they'll need numbers from that. And so depending if everybody needs their Social Security number and date of birth. So if you have a big family, sometimes it's nice to bring that tax return so you have everybody's information all in one spot. So you'll need all of those things and really having an idea about what your income is going to be.
All right, I've been talking with Jesse Mankins and Andrea Thomas here. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Support for programming comes from Alaska Seaplanes, providing scheduled service to 11 communities from Juneau. Reservations available at flyalaskaseaplanes.com or 789-3331. Alaska Seaplanes, flying at a higher standard.
Study on your time, on your terms. Business, accounting, and management classes at the University of Alaska Southeast are completely web-based with no scheduled meeting times. Get the education you want without putting life on hold. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/SOM or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
We'll be right back.
tune in to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Kristen Garreau, principal of Yaku, who's here to talk about high school.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about the application choice process for enrollment for high school here in Juno.
What's involved?
So it's a little bit unique. Now that we have three different high schools and we have open enrollment in our high schools, eighth graders get to choose which school they'd like to attend. And so we have some meetings coming up next week to share more information about the programs at each of our three high schools and kind of answer questions and introduce families to their options.
What kind of options are there?
So Juno has three high schools. Two comprehensive high schools, Juno Douglas High School downtown, Thunder Mountain High School out in the valley, and then we also have an alternative school, Yakusuke Dakihiri, which is where I'm the principal, and that's located downtown as well. All three of those schools are open enrollment.
What does open enrollment mean?
Open enrollment means, as opposed to elementary schools in our community or the middle schools in our community, where you attend the school based on your neighborhood. The high schools here are open enrollment, so it doesn't matter what neighborhood you live in. You can attend any one of the three high schools.
How do people get back and forth to different high schools? Is there buses they get?
Thanks for asking that. There is busing available for all students going to any of the schools. Yakusuke Dakihiri does run on an alternate schedule, so taking the bus to school is a little bit challenging. But if you want to go to Thunder Mountain or you want to go to Juno Douglas High School, there's busing available for you from all over town.
What are some of the reasons people give for going to a different high school?
So I think a lot of it comes down to neighborhood, where they live. It's nice to go to a school that's close by. Also, we also know kids choose where their friends are going. Next week is a good opportunity. We have two meetings next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday night, the 24th at 5:30 at JDHS, and Wednesday, 5:30 at Thunder Mountain, to kind of take some tours by students at each school and get to know a little bit more of the feel for each school. And that can also help families make that decision as well.
Is there any way to generalize what a school is strongest for?
I think they're all really great schools, and it really does come down to personal preferences and different things like that. But each school has really unique strengths, and that some of those will come out to you at those presentations as well. Some schools have some unique offerings. JDHS has engineering, for example, and Thunder Mountain has culinary classes. So there are some few different offerings, and we'll share more of those specifics as well. But generally, the same educational opportunities are provided at all the schools.
For open enrollment, do they have to make up their minds right now?
We want them to make up their minds by February 10th. Let me just double check that. Yes, by February 10th. So we want you to take the tour, come to the meetings, listen to the information, and then we want you to make that decision by February 10th.
Kristen, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K2...